And our next special guest, Alfred Weber, Exopolitics, Politics, Government, and the Law in the Universe. Alfred's next as I'm live from Washington, D.C. on Coast to Coast AM. Alfred Weber, International Director of the Institute for Cooperation in Space. Alfred is a peace advocate known as the father of exopolitics. In 1977, Alfred directed a proposed extraterrestrial communication study project for the Carter White House. Fascinating. Alfred, welcome to Coast to Coast.
Thank you, George. I'm very, very happy to be here.
How do you like D.C.?
You know, I went to Georgetown Prep.
Oh, you did? So,
yeah.
So you're familiar with
this area. Totally.
Very powerful city, isn't it?
Oh, listen.
You can sense it. You can feel it.
You know, it's a city that I think was designed on very deep Masonic principles of, mm-hmm. as far as architecture. And let's hope that it gives birth to a new world, a new peaceful world.
Tell me about this 1977 study, Alfred. This is fascinating.
Yeah, that was very, very interesting. The 1976 presidential campaign was a classic because it was between Jimmy Carter and Gerald R. Ford. Mm-hmm. Jimmy Carter actually on the campaign trail was asked a number of times. He said, I will open the files. So I took him seriously. At the time, I was Congressman Henry B. Gonzalez, the chairman of the House Banking Committee, and asked me down to Washington. I was helping get started an investigation into John F. Kennedy assassination, Martin Luther King. But we met a lot of the high-ranking transition people from the Carter camp. And I decided at that point to try and get a civilian scientific study of the extraterrestrial issue going. I was referred by Ingo Swann to Hal Puthoff and Russ Targ out at SRI. I went out there. They said, look, why don't you do it through the Center for Study of Social Policy, which is our futurist unit. I went and talked to Peter Schwartz there. There's a number of people there. They said, fine.
And so there was some interest then?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
And I identified some people who worked in the White House, in the Carter White House at that point. They worked for the domestic policy staff. We got an approval on a study. We got the White House approval. We had senior scientists attached to it. And we're going forward. This is in the fall of 1977. And at that point, the liaison between the Department of Defense and SRI called for a high-level meeting back at SRI and said, look, if this study goes forward, the Department of Defense will terminate all Stanford Research Institute studies monies.
They extorted them?
Yeah, which amounted to about a quarter of their budget. Their annual budget is about $100 million. That would have been $25 million. So
Reverse extortion.
Yeah, so that this study was stopped. I believe, George, that the reason it was stopped is that we would have uncovered secret human extraterrestrial liaison programs, which I think that Jim Sparks talks about, which I think that Joe has talked about.
The Woods talked about it on the program last night, Ryan and Bob Wood.
Sure. So we would have uncovered those, and that's why our study was stopped there. Now, we're very hopeful that President Obama, who I think is a gift to the world. I know there's a lot of controversy about him, but I really believe that. And we believe that he has an excellent opportunity. If you look at the last quarter of my book, Exopolitics, it's a case study on Mars in which we've used the remote viewing data that there may be an intelligent civilization living under the surface of Mars.
Right.
There's very good evidence that...
Or maybe a base.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
So I think that President Obama can really move forward and do disclosure by disclosing that there is a civilization on Mars. We now have had some very interesting data. You can go to our website and look at it at exopolitics.com, in which working with some of the researchers here... Andrew Bashago, we've been able to look at the photographs of the Mars rover Spirit. This is where we've actually landed on the planet Mars.
Right.
We have surface-level photographs. They released a composite photograph at the end of 2008, and it came out in January.
Is this something everybody could see?
Yeah, yeah. This is, yes, you. It's NASA released it in January of '08, and we began studying it with our researchers, and it looks like we've been able to identify living beings in those photographs. That is, three or four different typologies of humans, different typology of animals.
Are you talking about that picture of that little tiny creature that looks like it's waving back or something? Remember that one?
Yeah, no, sure. George, that feature is in the lower left of that composite photograph,
right,
which is PIA 10-14. Starting with that photograph, if you amplify it, we believe that may be an example of Martian statuary, because it looks like there are three things there. Number one, it looks like it's a stone lady that's on a pedestal. And there are two other items that are part of sort of a statuary complex. To the right of her, there's a male figure that is kind of broken off. And in the middle of it, there's like a bas-relief that looks like a plumed serpent. Now, what we found is not only different typologies of humans. These are kind of people that look like us. They're a little bit spindly, and their shoulder size, based on the scale, would be about 6 inches across. Of course, Mars is much
the atmosphere is smaller,
yeah,
so they would be smaller.
Yeah, right? But we've identified statuary and objects there. For example, what looks like to be a sarcophagus of a king that's wearing the identical cone hat that Nefertiti wore. You know, the kind of conical hat?
Almost like the face on Sidonia, isn't it?
Yeah.
That kind of look.
Yeah.
Like the Sphinx.
Yeah, and there's a theory that if you go back to... there's a lot of evidence for it that in 9500 BC, a fragment of the Vela supernova came into the solar system.
Mm-hmm.
It crashed into Mars and it destroyed its atmosphere and a lot of its civilization.
I believe that's a Hoagland Van Flandern.
Yes,
theory,
yes, right.
Okay.
And also it crashed into Earth and may have destroyed our great maritime civilization. But at that point, based on what we've come up with in PIA 10-14, it appears as though that Mars may have been a colony of Earth, i.e. Egypt, because there's a lot of Egyptian features.
Or the other way around.
Or it could be the other way around, because there's a lot of features in that statuary complex that look as though they might be Aztec or Mayan.
Right, right.
So it's that thing.
Last year, the head of the Observatory for the Vatican said that the belief in extraterrestrial life does not negate the belief in God, that the two could coexist, and that it was very probable. The world went nuts when they saw that story, Alfred. You did some checking into that, that statement. Tell me what happened.
Yeah, sure. This is part of a joint effort that we have between the Institute for Cooperation in Space, the Exopolitics Institute under Dr. Michael Sala, and Exopolitics Toronto under Victor Vigiani. We decided to get an official statement, if we could, from the Vatican Secretary of State, and that would be the appropriate Vatican official that would pronounce whether or not the interview by Father Funes, who's the Jesuit director of the Vatican Observatory, which was last May 13th, '08, was in fact Vatican policy. So through Victor, who had certain connections, we were able to get our letter of inquiry onto the desk of the Vatican Secretary of State.
That's huge.
Yeah, and we received a very formal reply within a very short period of time, which I'd like to announce tonight for the first time on Coast to Coast, and that is that the Vatican Secretary of State stated that in the interview, Father Funes was speaking for himself.
For himself.
That this was not official.
That's the Vatican's position.
Yeah.
Now, did they chastise him?
No. I think that this is what the Vatican has
because
done.
Sometimes if a priest goes out and says their own thing, like that guy said about the Holocaust, the bishop,
yeah,
they come down on him. So they didn't touch this one.
No. Because I think that there's been a lot of groundwork laid. For example, Conrado Balducci was a Monsignor who died within the last year or so. And he had taken the extraterrestrial issue, I think, as a matter of policy, very high within the Vatican. And I think that it is very interesting because the timing of the statement by Father Funes, which could have been, I think we were talking, you know, kind of a policy leak.
Maybe.
I.e., you
kind of like, let's stick our toes out there.
Sure.
Through him.
Sure. And
we can always deny it if it doesn't work.
Yes. And you have to look at the timing because it was on May 13th that the Vatican Observatore Romano, the official newspaper, published that on its front page. On May 14th, 2008 was the first batch of the UK Ministry of Defense files were released. Now, there's all the stories going on that both the Vatican representative and the UK representative of the UN attended the secret meetings at the UN in February of 2008, in which about 40 or so high-ranking representatives allegedly, according to U.S. Navy intelligence source A, had two or three meetings at the UN. Now, we have gone forward also, George, and I'd like to announce this for the first time tonight, that we have spoken with two persons directly at the UN. The first is, as you know, the UN, the president of the United Nations General Assembly, Miguel Descoto Brockman. He was the foreign minister of the Sandinista government between 1979 and 1990.
Okay.
He's the president of the UN General Assembly now. He's a Marian old priest. He's a very forward-looking person. We were able to contact Dr. Norman Miranda, who is his chief of cabinet.
Mm-hmm.
And we had a two-hour-long telephone conversation with him about UN General Assembly Decision 33-426 of 1978, which was when Sir Eric Gary of Grenada got through, who was a UFO contactee himself, got through the United Nations General Assembly a decision that says we should go forward, and this empowers you to start a United Nations Department of Extraterrestrial
That's
Affairs.
That's dramatic.
It's totally. That has lain fallow for 30 years. This is the 30th anniversary. So we went up to President Descoto's office, mm-hmm. spoke to Norman Miranda for 2 hours. He is a space law scholar. He wrote all the
And
laws.
Did they seem interested?
Yes. And in fact, both he and about 3 weeks ago, at the same time that Battleship Galactica had that thing at the UN,
right.
Yeah, we spoke to the UN official who organized that. And what they both said is that at the UN General Assembly, they are ready to go forward with a resolution that would implement 33-426. At the Secretariat, this person said,
that's,
all we need...
That's an admission, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. And they said, all that we need is one member nation out of 192 to sponsor this resolution. Now, in 1978, it was Grenada under Sir Eric Gary who did it. So we're announcing this at the press conference, the National Press Club, on Monday, and we're putting out a call to the nations. We're putting out a call to the world's
right.
people to say, go to your nation and ask them to sponsor a resolution implementing 33-426. It's been on the books for 30 years now,
amazing.
Which authorizes the United Nations to establish a Department of Extraterrestrial Affairs. Our remote viewing, if you look at the remote viewing evidence in the book Exopolitics, in this case study on Mars, what they say is that the extraterrestrials, for example, on Mars, they don't want to deal with any one country. They would rather deal with like an entity that represented all of humankind.
They want the Federation.
Yeah, right? Yeah. And so what we're trying to do is to move in this era, the United Nations, to implement this and to really begin to step up to the plate as they did 30 years ago.
How do we know, Alfred, it's not a trick, not by you, but a trick to try to form this one world government? And maybe they do it under the UFO umbrella.
You know, that's a very interesting point. My presentation today at the X conference was on Solar Cycle 24 and the galactic alignment. And the predictions for Solar Cycle 34 are very serious. On January 30th of this year, the National Academy of Sciences, a NASA-funded study, came out and said that with the 2012 solar flares hitting the high-power electronic electrical grid system,
wipe us out.
It will be, like they said, $2 trillion in the U.S. alone, $2 trillion of losses, millions dead, 6 to 10 years to recover. America might not recover. Now, there's a whole range of opinion as to whether we're going to have a maximum, right, solar maximum or not. Now, in 2009, we are at a minimum, but that could shift. Now, we looked at a study done by a Russian, a Soviet scientist, in 1922. He went back to 500 BC and discovered that the major wars, revolutions, and upheavals all happened during the solar maximum.
Sure. And something happens.
Exactly. So from 2010 to 2011, we're going to go into the increase period. That's when the people start fomenting, new leaders come
and
up with ideas.
They are.
They are.
People are whacked out there.
Yeah, yeah. And in 2012 to 14, that's when the revolutions happen. That's when the whole... Now, you can look at that positive or not, but one of the experts on this said that we're with the solar maximum, we're going to have the disappearance of national borders. So
yeah.
I say this is a wave that's coming, so we have to figure out how to democratize it.
Interesting. It is coming. I can feel it.
Yeah.
You can feel it.
Yeah. And but there's good things coming also, and that is that if you look a lot of the research that David Wilcock has been reporting, for example, that when in sidereal time, wherever you are located, your psychic capacity increases 400% depending on how closely you're located to the galactic center. And science has now confirmed in a 16-year study as of 2008 that we have a giant black hole at the center
of the Milky Way.
Yeah. And that's 4 to 4 million times as dense as the sun. The sun takes a month to rotate on its axis, the Earth 24 hours. The galactic center rotates once every 11 minutes.
Jeez.
And that's like it's broadcasting all of these ideas to us, and it's actually upgrading us genetically. And there's a lot, you know, all of the experiments that have shown that you can take a laser and convert a salamander embryo to frog embryo. Mm-hmm. It's the same principle that when the galactic center is putting out these pulses, they can come in and they upgrade our genetic capacity.
Let's get back to the United Nations for just a moment.
Yeah.
Do you think you're going to get one member nation to sponsor this?
I'm really optimistic because we're coming into such a change period that, you know, San Marino, I mean, we have the nations that are beginning to disclose. If we go back to 2003, Mexico, then Peru,
Brazil,
then we have France,
Canada, UK.
The UK. Now, why wouldn't those people want to internationalize the issue? Internationalize the issue, create a body of experts, you know, really.
Now, would this be to study the phenomenon, or would this be to simply admit we're being visited, and now we've got a liaison office?
No, this is a full-fledged operation. Number one, it's to coordinate all national efforts on extraterrestrial life and unidentified flying objects. Number two, the 1978 decision authorizes the establishment of United Nations Agency on Extraterrestrial Affairs.
That's dramatic. We'll be back because it's interactive tonight. You're next. We'll give you the phone numbers in just a second. I'm George Norrie, live from WMAL in Washington, D.C. at the X Conference, and this is Coast to Coast AM. Well, it's time for our shout out. You know, you make Coast to Coast what it is, the highest rated overnight program in the world. So thank you to those of you listening to the program on your favorite radio stations, Streamlink members, XM Satellite as well, and then the various chat rooms all over the place, including, of course, my dear friends at the NighthawkZone.com and also Imaginative Worlds, Into Infinity, Frog Forum, the National Radio Club folks, Sorcery IRC, the MySpace groups, lots of those, by the way. Even Twitter is starting to jump on board with us. It's all over the place. Thank you. We'll be back in a moment with Alfred Weber and your phone calls next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, I'm George Norrie, live in Washington, D.C. with Alfred Weber this hour. Richard Dolan joins us next hour. We'll take your phone calls this half hour. Alfred, I'm still fascinated by the thoughts about Mars and the belief system that there could be some ETs there.
Yes, and one of our researchers was actually called by a lifelong CIA employee. After our research came out in January of this year, you can see it at exopolitics.com, and she said that the CIA has knowledge that there is a humanoid population on Mars of about 1 million. They live
1 million?
Yeah, and they live underground. They're the survivors of the solar system catastrophe. As the remote viewing evidence in Exopolitics states, they are desirous of emigrating to Earth because conditions there are so kind of harsh.
And have been, probably.
Yeah. And so this actually, what we do is we set out a program in Exopolitics for public interest diplomacy with the intelligent civilization on Mars. The reports show that there would be a lot of benefits because they're about 150 years technologically in advance of Earth.
150 years?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so we would have...
Well, we're close.
But there are cousins. I mean, Mars and Earth were a joint society before the...
Are we they or are they us?
Both.
Yeah.
And so we would benefit a lot by Martian immigration and the Martian technology. And this is the sort of thing that this is a great way to do disclosure as a positive act, that both planets, both civilizations would benefit.
You know, it sounds unbelievable.
Well, you know, I invite readers to go to the remote viewing evidence that's replicable evidence and under laboratory conditions, and also with a breakthrough now that we have on the NASA photographs PIA 10-14 and others, which actually confirm the existence of humans walking around on the Martian surface, of numerous types of animals that we have here on Earth, plus animals that we don't have, and structures there. There is kind of a post-collapse society there, it looks like. And I invite readers, there's a 40-page paper by the researcher who did this, Andrew Bishago. You can download that for free at www.exopolitics.com. It has numerous photographs and text and analysis. We also have 30 other PDF documents that you can download there for free.
All right, let's take some calls here with Alfred Weber, west of the Rockies. We'll go to you, Chris, in California. You're up with us. Hey, Chris.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call first. This is for Alfred Weber, of course. I'm wondering, why is it so crucial to keep this such a big secret from the population? We have been told many, many lies by the government in the past, and people have not, it hasn't had pandemonium erupted because of it. What's it going to hurt if they disclose?
That's a key question, and I believe that there may be numerous reasons at stake, one of which that we ran into in the 1977 proposed Carter White House study is that disclosure in the United States would be very special because of the special relationship that the U.S. government and military have with certain categories of ETs, and that was made public when Jim Sparks came forward with his book, The Keepers, and that is that in return for the right to abduct on U.S. territory. There was technology transfer in terms of time travel and teleportation technology. And Jim Sparks, you know, talks about being abducted straight onto a military base. So that what you're dealing with here, that I believe no other country has but the United States, is that the military establishment has a special monopoly on the advanced technology of a certain, or perhaps one or two extraterrestrial civilizations. They don't want to give up that monopoly. And that's what disclosure would bring. But now that we have the evidence of the Martian, of the Martian humanoids, and these are people like us, they're not like the Greys or the reptilians who come from a different background. I think that we're going to be proceeding, for example, with freedom of information lawsuits against NASA, sure, to have them come forth. And I believe that the Obama administration will take the enlightened position and disclose with regard to Mars. And these, you know, I think that these contracts that were entered into in the early 50s, you know, it's a new dawn out there, and people do not want war as a product. They want peace, and they want prosperity.
Were you disappointed in Carter? I mean, you went pre-election. He talked about all these, his sightings and what he was going to do, and he never disclosed.
Yeah,
and then
you know,
he doesn't even talk about his sighting anymore.
Yes and no. I think that Jimmy Carter was under tremendous pressure. I think he in good faith attempted to disclose in his first year in office, and there were a number of programs that he attempted to go forward. I'm one of the people that believes that Jimmy Carter is one of our great presidents, even though now he will kind of flip-flop. He is a man who is genuinely committed to peace. After I left SRI, after the termination of the program, I went down, and I actually was covering as a journalist down in Mexico City and became friendly with his press secretary and kind of covered Carter down there. He's a genuine world leader.
He's a good guy. He's a nice guy.
He's a genuine world leader. And I believe that he genuinely tried in that first year.
Something happened.
It was the U.S. military. It was the Department of Defense that shut everything down.
Next up, let's go east of the Rockies. Toledo, Ohio, not far from Detroit, about 50 miles. Brandon, you're up with us. Hey, Brandon.
Well, hello there. How's everything going?
All is well. How's Toledo?
Pretty good. Enjoying the weather right now. Kind of cold tonight, but warm all throughout the day.
Love it. Okay, go ahead.
My main inquiry is it's about the aliens and the Egyptian pyramids and how the portal of, or how everything is connected towards that.
Yes. There appears to be a very powerful connection between ancient Egypt and the civilization on Mars.
Cairo means Mars, does it not?
That's correct. That's absolutely correct.
Hoagland taught me that.
Yeah, and I have heard anecdotes that at certain times of the year in the Great Pyramids aligns with Mars. In these photographs, some PIA, NASA PIA 10214, you will see a lot of Egyptian-like artifacts. For example, the sarcophagus of the king. That conical hat is identical to the conical hat that the bust of Nefertiti, discovered in 1913, is. There's a lot of, in the sculpture, there's a great presence in the Egyptian civilization of cats. You'll find a lot of cats depicted in the Martian sculptures that we can identify in this photograph.
And these reptilian figures too.
Yes, yes. So there you're going back to a lot of the pyramidal cultures, the Mayan culture and the Aztec culture. You know, Quetzalcoatl, who is the sort of the god-man of the Aztecs and the Mayans, means plumed serpent. And if we go to that figure of the classic woman and the man, the Martian statuary with a plumed serpent in the center. So it's very plausible that our great maritime civilization prior to the 9500 BC cataclysm had the ability to travel interplanetarily, and that either Earth was a colony of Mars or via the Egyptian culture or vice versa, that Mars was a colony of Earth.
Next up, let's go west of the Rockies, Perry in California. Hi, Perry.
Hey, how you doing?
We're great, thanks.
All right, I got a question for you, guest. There is a, I'm sure you've seen this online about the crater hail. And when you look at the crater hail, NASA smudged the picture, but if you really go and zoom in about 300 to 400%, you can make out marks and structures which look very much like Egypt.
Yes. If you go to our website, exopolitics.com, you'll be able to download a free PDF that has analysis and photos of the settlements in the crater hail on Mars.
Yeah, that crater hail picture, if the listeners would just go to it, and I think it's the European Space Agency that has those pictures. It's just, I mean, I was looking at it for hours. I mean, looking at these structures, they were definitely man-made. These were not rock formations of any kind.
Yes. Now, what we've noted is that when you look at the Martian artifacts in PIA 10214, you can which is on the Columbia Basin by Grissom Hill, named after Gus Grissom, the U.S. astronaut, and one can identify Martian statuary and structures that look like they are pre solar system catastrophe, pre 9500 BC. And then one can identify structures that are modern, that relate to the Martian civilization. So there's both a large archaeological component that relates to the Martian civilization that was destroyed, and those might be the hail crater structures. And then there's also the modern Martian civilization, and the animals, and which appear to be ongoing.
Alfred, what do you think of the whistleblowers, and do we have enough of them?
That is a very brave trail to follow, because there are enormous personal consequences, I believe, and I know that in our case, what we have really learned of substance in the field of exopolitics has come from whistleblowers, and these are people of conscience, and who follow constitutional values, and they're very brave individuals to come forward.
And it seems that they do come out for disclosure in some form or fashion.
Oh yes,
just not enough of them.
Yeah, you know. I was one of the Disclosure Project witnesses in the Disclosure Project press conference.
The one with James Fox or prior to?
No, this is the one on May 9th, 2001.
With Stephen Greer.
Yes.
Okay.
And I was filmed, and my sworn affidavit was taken, and there are between 100 and 400 Disclosure Project witnesses, many of whom are former high-ranking government official scientists who military personnel, and each of our Disclosure Project witnesses is willing to go to Congress at this time and testify. And for example, the gentleman who I was videotaped with giving my testimony was a gentleman who had been a lifelong employee of the CIA. Mm-hmm. His job was to ride on the planes that went from the nuclear bomb factories out to the different bases and recycled them for foreign military bases. He testified on tape. He says, "I'm breaking my oath here, but I want to say this before I die." This is a kind of elderly gentleman.
Sure.
He said that every single of their flights ferrying back and forth American nuclear warheads for recycling was shadowed by unidentified flying objects. Yeah, every single one.
They know. That technology's there.
Yeah.
They know. First-time caller, let's go to Well, he's not there. Let's go to west of the Rockies. Kevin in Chico, California. Go ahead, Kevin, a couple minutes for you.
Hello, Mr. Weber. I had a question. You had referenced the face on Mars, a pretty famous structure we've seen for a while. I was wondering which direction you view is up, because when I downloaded the picture from the Mars Express website, I experimented by flipping it around so the rounded part was up. It turned from a questionable face into more of a bust of a young woman, and I was wondering if you've ever looked at it that way.
Okay. You know, I'm here going to defer to George, who actually brought up the face on Mars. I do not claim expertise on the face on Mars. I believe Richard Hoagland is there, but I can speak to you on the contents of NASA PIA 10214, which is the Columbia Basin, which is where the NASA rover Spirit photographed a very large composite photograph available on the internet now.
Absolutely. A couple more minutes to go, Alfred, and then we're going to wrap things up. What are you doing next? How do you continue to push?
Well, we are pushing, number one, we're pushing at the UN for a member nation to come forward, and I appeal to all the listeners of Coast to Coast to go to their foreign nations to bring ideas and contacts so that we can get a nation to sponsor a resolution to implement 33-426. We are going to push the Obama administration to disclose with regard to Mars. We're going to bring freedom of information lawsuits against NASA on the basis of their photograph to disclose.
So you're going full boat here.
Full bore. And we have the wind and tide of the sunspot cycle behind us.
Will John Podesta help a little bit to try to get some information?
We certainly would hope so. He obviously is a very forward-looking man, a very intelligent man, and we certainly intend to strategically seek alliances with him and with his office.
Your incredible work, ExoPolitics. Where do you get this book?
You can go online and get it at Amazon.com or at ExoPolitics.com.
All right, very good. ExoPolitics, politics, government, and law in the universe. And any more speeches at the X conference? Or are you done now?
No, I'll be part of the panel Sunday night, and then Monday I'll be part of the press conference with Dr. Edgar Mitchell and with Milton Torres, the former Air Force pilot, and others.
Mitchell's a home run, isn't he?
Well, you know, he's the sixth man on the moon who conducted psi experiments from the moon. He founded the Institute of Noetic Sciences.
Yes.
He's on our board of advisors at the Institute for Cooperation in Space.
And he's all for this.
Oh, yes, yes.
Well, that tells you something. When an astronaut who's been on the moon says he believes in extraterrestrial life, believes in visitation, says that he's been told by people within government that he trusts and believes that we've been visited, you got to believe the guy, Alfred.
Now, he's an extraordinary asset to the people of the world now.
I'll be back in a moment. Richard Dolan is with us as we continue with our X conference special report live from Washington, D.C. on Coast to Coast AM.